It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. Man, it's an exciting time. Here it is. A couple of days since the election of Donald Trump. And it's kind of a interesting time, right? What a great process to be involved with. And I hope that you were, in fact, involved with the process, that you got out there and voted and didn't listen to the whiners out there saying that the system is broke. And the system may, the system may not work as well as we'd like it to be. I'd like it to, but it's not broken. Or even if it is broken, guess what? It's the only system we have. And a lot of countries around the world would love to have what we have, right? So don't take it for granted. I hope you get out there and vote. If you didn't vote this last time, I hope you'll vote next time. Get involved. It is a great experience to go out there and vote. All right. Listen, I was going to... I wanted to discuss a couple of different things that I've been working on, but I'm not quite ready. So instead, I'm going to play this interview I did with James Arthur Ray, good old James Arthur Ray, and then I'll be back, and we'll do a live segment with our next guest. But anyway, just bear with me as we get through this Monday. I hope that you enjoy this this taped show with James Arthur Ray.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, James Arthur Ray, New York Times bestselling author of Harmonic Wealth, published in 81 countries around the world, translated into 18 different languages. James is also co-author of the groundbreaking film The Secret. His experience as an entrepreneur earned his company a spot in the Inc. 500 list in 2009 as one of the fastest growing companies in the U.S. James was featured on The Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN's Larry King Live, Piers Morgan Live, Good Morning America, and many more internationally syndicated shows. At the top of his industry, James was involved in a terrible accident in 2009 that claimed the lives of three people he cared about deeply. As a result, James lost his business. He was abandoned by most of his friends and colleagues. Simultaneously, his mother was diagnosed with cancer, his father with dementia, and eventually, James also lost his freedom. Rebuilding his life, James' personal experience proves that it's in the challenges and the adversities of life that we reset, reboot, reassess, and realize once again, what's truly important. James states that it's our challenges and our crisis that present the greatest opportunity, and if we're only willing to utilize them in that way, I love that quote. James Arthur Ray, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay, so I am so impressed by what's happened to you and how you've handled it, because really a lot of people would have handled it so differently, so poorly. You have really rise to the challenge, and so I want our audience to understand what has transpired in your life. Obviously a lot of people know you around the world, but just kind of give us a recap what your life has been over the last few years.
I don't think we have enough time, Bert. It's been a grand adventure, to say the least. Now, it's been an adventure wrapped in pain, but an adventure nonetheless. I really know, I don't believe, Bert, but I know that the purpose of life is to live. And so, I've lived. There will not come a time at the end of my journey in this physical form where I'll look back and go, damn, that was boring. And I don't mean to make light of anything, but it's been challenging. I've been to the peak and I've been to the pit.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that most of us look at adversity and challenges almost through like a victim mentality. versus, as you say, looking for the opportunities that are, you know, hidden within these challenges. So
Yeah, you know what, Bert? I think in particularly in Western culture, we have bought into in personal development and spiritual development, and even in economic and political arenas, we've bought into a fantasy. You know, if you look at the history of the United States, we're embryos on this planet by comparison to other countries. I mean, we're a really young nation. And yes, we've gone through adversities, but, you know, if we go back to the end of World War II, we've been on a climb primarily for a long, long time. And so consequently, we tend to condition ourselves into thinking that things are going to get better and better and better and better and better and better and better. But the reality is there's a law in this universe called the law of rhythm, which says everything moves in cycles and rhythms, and history proves that. And when you understand that, Bert, then you recognize that the strategies in the winter time, if you will, are different than the strategies in the spring and the summer. And a lot of people convince themselves that if I just know the law of attraction, if I just learn the right strategy, if I just, you know, go through the right circumambulations or religious rituals, that I'm going to have all rainbows and roses. And that's just not true.
Right. Now let's talk about that a little bit, because you were in this blockbuster movie, The Secret, and there's a lot of people out there that that talk about the law of attraction, and that if you think a certain way, all the stuff is going to be brought into your life, and that's not always the case. The law of attraction, is it that simple? Am I missing something? Because some people will tell you it doesn't work, and then you'll have just as many people who say it works all the time. So what's your take on the law of attraction when you're dealing with crap that you weren't expecting, that you weren't even thinking about?
Well, I think one of the great fantasies, if I may reflect back on that premise that I just mentioned a moment ago, is that if I think the right thoughts, then I'm never going to have any challenges, and all great things are going to show up in my life. You know, we hear all the little ditties, Bert, like, you know, what you think about, you become. Well that's
right.
Just not true. You know, I mean, if that were true, when I was in high school, I would have become a busty varsity cheerleader. Right? Because that's all I ever thought about, you know? And so it's not that simple. No, you're not missing something, Bert. You're an intelligent, you know, individual who's looking at the reality of things that, you know, I can't tell you, even to this day, Bert, you know, I've been back teaching and sharing and mentoring for a year, and I get Facebook messages all the time. You know, tell me how I was just, in fact, doing some mentoring last night. How do I become famous and make a lot of money really fast? Well, you don't. You know, first and foremost, I was listening to your previous guest, and first and foremost, wrong objective. Famous and lots of money, wrong objective. You know, I've been really blessed to be on the stage with billionaires, Richard Branson, Donald Trump. I've had dinner with billionaires, Sheldon Adelson, and many multimillionaires, and I can assure you that not one of them, Bert, not one, went into what they're doing to make money. They go into what they're doing because they love it, because they want to become good at it, and they want to provide service. They maybe want to change the world in some profound way. Steve Jobs was a great example of that.
Sure.
And so we got to realign our thinking. We really do, in my opinion.
No, absolutely. I think that it's that mass media where it's been hyped out of proportion that, you know, if you do this, if you think this way, then like you said, nothing but rainbows, butterflies, and unicorns will transverse through your life. And I think that, at least in my life, and I'm hearing it from you as well, that you start to become aware of who you are and what matters most to you during these times of challenges and crisis. Not too long ago, I sat down with Kelly LeBrock. And I don't know if you know who she is. Kelly LeBrock was probably most famous for Weird Science, and you know, and she was in a couple of Steven Seagal movies. And so then when she started having a family, she removed herself from Hollywood. So we talked about times of setbacks and challenges, and she says these are the best opportunities because it really helps you become the person that you want to become. And
well let me
go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think that most of us, especially in Western culture, most of us, kind of what you said at the beginning of the segment, that we've been taught to avoid these things, that this is pain, that this is wrong, that we shouldn't be having these things, and it truly is, or it certainly can be a blessing if we choose to go that way. But go ahead.
Let me give you a simple example. I was flying into Minneapolis once to speak to 500 people. The flight was delayed. I used to be on the road over 200 days a year. I was in 3 to 4 different states per month, every single week. You know, 12 states, 12 states per month, 3 to 4 every single week. And you know, a lot of time on a plane. So a flight was delayed. I mean, that happens. Flight is delayed. I get off. I'm running late. There's 500 people in a room waiting for me to present. The promoter is beside herself. I get off, I go down to get my bag. They lost my bag. Of course, right?
Of course.
They lost my bag. They don't know where it is. And so I'm attempting to deal with that and fill out the claim form, and I'm already way late. I jump in the back of the car, and I have one of these drivers who is just adamant about driving the speed limit. And I'm in the back seat, and I'm doing my best. I'm saying, hey, you know, what would it take for you to, like, go 57 at least, you know? And she's like, nope, I'm not getting the ticket. And so, okay, I rush into the back of the house through the kitchen. The promoter meets me in the hallway in the back, and the first words out of her mouth were, how did you attract this, James? Kind of smug, right?
Right.
And I said,
thinking
by
about
being
this
on the road over 200 days a year,
yeah.
You know, it's the mentality, and you know, when things went sideways in my life, or to say the least sideways, I mean,
right.
They went upside down. There were people all over the internet, well, this guy doesn't know anything about the law of attraction. I submit to you that if you're on a rapid growth curve, and if you're really going after anything in life, talk to the greatest entrepreneurs. You're going to have more challenges, not less.
That's right.
And to think otherwise is an illusion. I'll give you one more.
And let me point this out. This is historically factual. You can look, and again, not to become too spiritual here. I don't want to freak anybody out, but I'm going to use the Bible. If you look at the Bible or you look at the Torah, you look at the people who were on the growth curve, as you're talking about, moving as fast as they can towards their objectives, and they were met with more challenges, more hostility, more opposition. So why would it be different for you and I?
I'm so glad you said that, Bert. I just wrote in a recent blog. I do a blog every Monday. And in a recent blog, I said the very same thing you just said. I said, you know, look at Abraham, look at Moses, look at Joseph, look at Peter, look at Paul, look at Jesus. You know, we live in a country, in a world that says it's 25%. Christian. Now, what that means, that's up for discussion. But, you know, at least we all look at the Old Testament if 25% are Christian, and if you're Judaic or Islamic, you look at the Old Testament, and we and the Christians also look at the New. But take anyone in that book, not one of them had an easy life. Not one. Now, you don't like that book? Well, then go to mythology. In all great mythology, the hero always faces tremendous challenges. I think Hercules faced 7 or 10, and they sometimes and often go to hell. They're often killed, they're ostracized, and they finally come forth. That's the journey of the human soul. I believe what we've lost in our society and in our world, Bert, is our mythology, not a fantasy about some actual historic figure that lived in the past, which turns mythology into a newspaper report of historical events. Mythology is the history book of the soul. And that's what we must go through, because it's that those times that peel away all the illusions and all the layers of crap, if you will. And believe me, I had plenty of layers. I bought into my own press. I really bought in lock, stock, and barrel to my own press.
You know what, and I'm so glad you're so honest to talk about that, because when I look back at all the biggest mistakes that I've made in my life, you know, it's because I bought into my own BS, right? You start believing that you are all this crap, and then you realize, you know, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Nobody really knows me, or nobody really cares, and, you know, you got to pick up after yourself just like everybody else and whatever.
Yeah, you know, Bert, it's really easy to develop a lot of hubris in my profession. I was very blessed, and I recognize now that I was blessed, and I mean that in the ultimate sense of the word. It wasn't me; it was coming to me and through me versus from me. Big difference.
Right.
And I had people from 143 different countries coming to my live events, thousands of people asking me how to improve their business and their lives, and you start to kind of think you got it figured out, you know. And it's then I believe that the universe cares enough about us to say, well, let me rip the rug out from under you and see how much you got figured out, bucko, you know. Because now let's see what you really believe, you know. Now,
okay.
Do you really believe what you say you do? And can you live it in the fire?
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about this, because in the intro, I talk about the fact that you lost a lot of your friends. Now, these are people that you obviously thought were your friends, but when the fire came on, you know, and all this negative press was being thrown at you, how many stood by your side?
Well, if you want to look at what I would traditionally call the spirit, I think there's two arenas. There's the more spiritual oriented personal development arena, which are the people in the secret, and that group of individuals. And then there's the more practical personal development arena. And out of all of it, two people picked up the phone to ever call and say, how are you doing? And that was Bob Proctor and Rhonda Byrne. They were the only two that picked up the phone to even say, how are you doing? And these were people that I rubbed elbows with, I worked with, and that being said, though, Bird, I'm not casting stones, because I understand. If you look back, it took me a long time to come to understanding, by the way, because I went through a lot of bitterness and anger. I was angry at God at one point, and yet that was my own self-importance. I realize that now. If you go back to 2009, you look at what was happening historically. We had just come off of a peak in the personal development arena. The real estate market hit the skids. You know, it was a tough time. And so I understand, you know, if the situation had been reversed, I would like to say that I would have been different. I can't say that for sure. I'd like to say I could, but you just don't know, you know. When things are going sideways and you're hanging on by your fingernails in your business, you don't want to associate yourself with the guy who has leprosy. You
right.
know, I mean,
right.
why put your
well,
business
and on top
at greater
of that,
risk?
Yeah, not only there's that issue there, that element there, and then there's the other element that a lot of people, because of lack of, let's say, training, really don't know what to, you know, don't know what to do with you. Do I call him? Do I leave him alone? If he picks up the phone, what do I say? You know, there is some of that. I mean, obviously your good friends could call you up and say, dude, you know, and at least talk with you and support you. Let me ask you this though. Okay, you have probably one of the biggest selling book, New York Times bestselling book, Harmonic Wealth. As I mentioned in the beginning of the show, I mean, it's worldwide, you know, 18, 20 languages, millions have sold. Did the concepts in that book, how did they help you when you were going through your challenges, when you're going through trial, when you were, I guess, in prison for 2 years? Did you go back and review those concepts? How did they help you?
Actually, I did, Bert. I read my own book twice. while I was in prison, and I thought it was pretty damn good, actually.
Were you going through it and going, wow, that was good? I can't believe I said that. That's really good.
Yeah, exactly. The best things that I quote have ever created, I realize, have come through me, not from me. Big difference.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I write a lot of times when I'm really inspired, when I'm plugged into higher intelligence, universal intelligence, and it comes through me, and I read the page, and I'm like, damn, where did that come from? Because it wasn't from me. But the reality is, my objective with Harmonic Wealth was to redefine wealth. And, if you trace the root of the wealth word wealth back to its origins, it translates as well-being. We've turned it into money. In Western culture, it's not money. You can go after the money and get rich. It doesn't mean you're going to be wealthy. I can guarantee you, as I said earlier, I've been blessed to mentor and to work with many multimillionaires. I've shared the stage with billionaires. And, in many cases, the only people who worry more about money than the poor are the rich because, you show up as you. The more money you have, Bert, the more opportunities you have to lose it. And so, consequently, wealth is well-being. And what I talk about in that book is a state of harmony and well-being across five areas of life: financial, relational, mental, physical, and spiritual. And did that get me through my life challenges? You bet it did, because I call those the five pillars. The money was gone quickly. I was financially busted before my trial even began. I had a law team that so believed in my cause and was so noble, they did it all pro bono. I cannot tell you how much it costs to defend yourself in a criminal trial. It would blow your mind. But I'll tell you, it's eight figures. And so, Munger, Tolles, and Olson believed in me. They believed in the case. They actually sought me out. And so money was gone. My point is that finances is only one-fifth of the equation: financial, relational, mental, physical, spiritual. It was the strength in those other pillars that kept me afloat. True wealth is not what you have, Bert. It's what you're left with when all you have is gone. I lost my home. I lost my life savings. I lost my business. It took me 20 years to build. When all that, I lost my reputation. I was attacked and vilified, as you know. When all that went down, what I was left with was what I had inside. And that's true wealth. True wealth is an internal realization, not an external acquisition. And I believe, that's I've lived it, and that's a big thing that I'm passionate about us coming to as a collective populace in our world today.
James, Arthur Ray, we're going to end on that note. I think that you hit the nail right on the head. That is true wealth, because ultimately the money fades. You're shoved in a hole in the ground, and all your stuff that you work for is gone. The only thing left is your legacy, your friends, your family, the people who, internal wealth that you talked about. James, great stuff. Look forward to having you back on the show again, and I know that my producers are talking to your people about the stuff that we're doing on TV. Look forward to meeting you there, and looking forward to having you back again, my friend. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, keep doing good work, Bert. I really appreciate it.
All righty. Guys, that wraps it up. Great stuff there by James Arthur Ray. Learning from your challenges, turning your crisis into an opportunity to make yourself better. Finding out where your true wealth lies. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, good stuff there from James Arthur Ray. And you know what? And one of those things that you never realize who your friends are, and you don't ever realize what you're truly, truly grateful for until you go through such a massive, massive, I'll say, setback, life change, failure, whatever you want to call it, from massive success to massive failure. And what's amazing about that story is, though, even though he got his legal bills pro bono, he didn't have to pay for his legal bills, he quickly ran out of money, as he mentioned. And, you know, that just happens. You know, we as human beings, sometimes we don't think that, you know, that things are going to change. When it's good, it's going to be good forever. When it's bad, it's going to be bad forever. And sometimes we forget that whether it's good or bad, this too will pass. All right. Let's bring on my next guest. Oh, hey, that's a good idea. Let's do it. All right. My next guest is Dr. Mario Musa, and he'll correct me if I'm wrong on that. He's the author of Committed Teams, 3 Steps to Inspiring Passion and Performance. He teaches the executive programs at Wharton School of Executive Education. He also advises senior leaders at the world's top companies and organizations. He has delivered keynotes and workshops for executives in Hong Kong, Shanghai, Istanbul. I was trying to pronounce it the way they do it. Istanbul, São Paulo, Delhi, Mumbai, and Paris, and throughout the U.S. Dr. Mario Musa, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today, and you do have my name right, Musa.
All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Good to start there.
It was
there.
Rolling the dice there. It was just a roll of the dice. You know, to our listeners, and you probably don't even know this, but, you know, when we work with publicity agencies and stuff like that, we always ask them to please give us a phonetic spell phonetic spelling of the name, because, you know, I've had P-A-T-E spelled, you know, which for most people call it Pate, P-A-T-E, and then I've had some guests who pronounce it Pate. So, you know, it's always good to have that pronunciation, especially since English is my second language. I'm not really sure, you know, how things go, but I'm glad that we got it right. And so I want to jump into this, because here you are. You're this doctor at executive programs at Wharton School of Executive Education, but yet you hail rocker Bruce Springsteen as a great example of a leadership. Talk about this.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I have a lot of respect for Springsteen and what he says in his memoir, Born to Run, which is a book I would recommend to everybody. And I don't get any royalty payments for making that recommendation. It's just a really good read. And he has a lot to teach about leadership and also managing your career. And what I talk about in a recent piece is 3 things in particular, but there are a whole lot of things that you can learn from him. One is that Springsteen early on figured out what he really loved. He liked dancing, but he even loved playing music more. So that was his passion. That was his interest. And he worked really hard at developing that interest. And, you know, that there's a lesson there about persistence and focus. It's one thing to know what you want to do, what you're passionate about. It's another thing to know what your talent is. But you don't reach the highest levels of a field or performance unless you really work at your passion. So that's one thing. And then he also committed himself to knowing himself, as I say, like ancient philosophers as well as rock stars know the importance of knowing thyself. And one of the things that Springsteen recognized about himself is that he wasn't a great singer. And though he was a good guitar player, not the greatest guitar player in the world, So he had to find some other way to connect with his audience. And one of his insights there was that he had to do it all. He had to write the songs. He had to sing. He had to play guitar. So it's that first recognition of what he was good at, but then what he was not so good at, that set him on his path. And then, you know, he had a vision of the person he wanted to be. So he knew that he wanted to be a great performer, and he knew that that would be one of his defining characteristics. You know, he wasn't going to distinguish himself by his voice or his guitar virtuosity. So he really worked hard to put together a band and put together a show, a way of performing, you know, multi-hour, really super intense shows that moved his audiences. So he had a vision of who he wanted to be, and he worked at that. So, you know, those are three basic lessons that come across in his book: experimenting with your passion, knowing yourself, and becoming the person you want to be.
Yeah, I love that. That to me is you know, that to me is awesome, and at the same time, very difficult. I think that this is why most people struggle in life, right? Because, you know, when you have that clarity of purpose, man, I think that is when you're free-flowing, you're in your genius state, if you want to call it that. I mean, nothing bothers you because, man, this is what I'm going to do, and this is great, and this is what I'm passionate about. And I think that a lot of people don't know how to get there. That's I think that's the thing that's killing most people. So how do you get, you know, how do you get to that point of clarity and knowing what you want?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, you mentioned that I and a couple of teammates published a book a while back, just a few months ago, called Committed Teams, Three Steps to Inspiring Passion and Performance. And for us, commitment is a key idea. And I think it starts with a kind of gut check. Asking yourself, how committed am I to developing my talent, and how committed am I to really assessing what my skills are, and then what my shortcomings are. You know, Springsteen talks about the listening to himself on a tape recorder, and he says that the sound in your head has little to do with how you actually sound. And that observation is a kind of metaphor, I think, for willingness to take a good hard look at yourself and then ask, how hard do I really want to work? So I think it all begins with that question. Do I have the energy to stick with an idea? And, you know, let's make a connection to the business world and entrepreneurial ventures. You might have a business idea. You might have an idea for a startup, but then question is, can I stick with it? I think we often labor under the misconception it's enough to have a really good idea, but a really good idea is just the start of the work. And then the next step is to ask, do I have the energy to stick with that idea and follow it, ride it almost like a bucking bronco and all the twists and turns, because ideas develop over time, and you know, where a business starts is not usually where it ends up. So it takes a lot of commitment, stick-to-itiveness to develop an idea. So again, it all starts with that gut check. You know, do you really have that drive? Lots and lots of evidence tells us that that's one of the keys to success. One of my colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania, Angela Duckworth, is a psychologist who studies success. And she identifies two key traits. One is having an interest, you know, a defining interest in your life. And then the second is persistence. So I think stepping back and being honest with yourself about whether you have that persistence in you is really important. And sometimes I think it's useful to ask a friend or a spouse or a colleague if they think you have it, because often we fool ourselves. We think we're more committed than we actually are. Sometimes someone on the outside can give you that feedback and help you understand yourself better than you would alone. So I would start there, you know, with a gut check. You know, do I have that energy, and how long can I stick with the idea?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what I like about your Bruce Springsteen example there is that he realized, you know, I don't have the greatest voice and I may not be the greatest at guitar, but this is what I love to do and I'm just going to go for it. And I think that's what it takes because, you know, when you are, going for something like, you know, like anything in life, you don't know where that's going to take you. I mean, Bruce could have been a guy that we've never heard of who was moderately successful there in, in the East Coast doing the smaller stadiums and doing the bars and stuff like that. And I think he would have been just as happy with that because it's what he loved to do.
Right. Right. That's a really important point. And so, you know, I would add one point to what we were just talking about. You know, do I have the energy to stick with my idea, whatever it is, or my interest? And then, do I love it? Because if you don't love it, you're not gonna stick with it. I think that's exactly right. You know, there are lots of self-help type books with titles that have, you know, that are some version of, you know, love what you do and success will follow, and love what you do, money will follow. There's some truth to that, but only some truth to that. I think it's really important to love what you do, but then you have to work really hard and work often for a really long time. You know, there's the proverbial overnight success that we like to talk about, whether it's in music or business or science, you know, whatever the field of endeavor is. But often when you look into the backgrounds of successful people, what you find is they've been working at their idea for 10, 20, maybe years or longer. So what appears to be an overnight success is often the product of many, many years of experimentations and setbacks and experimentation and highs and lows. So, successful entrepreneurs, successful musicians are able to ride that roller coaster. And not everybody's able to do that.
Sure. No, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about this. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do there at Wharton School with the executive programs.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the we apply so these ideas that we've been talking about to working with teams, and what we know about teams is successful teams is very similar to what we know about successful individuals. You know, successful teams know their goals. They check with each other, teammates. Their other teammates check in about commitment. And what we found is really important is making a connection between group goals and individual goals. That is, making a connection to your individual passion and finding a way to link that to group goals. So what we do with the executive teams that we work with is help them define those goals, help them define them in the right way, build a bridge between team goals and individual goals. And then we also help them check in on their progress. And that sounds like a pretty basic idea, but it turns out that we get in the typical workday, we're distracted, we're pulled in a lot of different directions, we're tired, and often we just don't check in on our progress in the way that we need to, and we don't check in with our teammates. So that process of checking in and making sure that everybody's still committed to the goals that were, you know, that launched a team project, and then making little changes and experimenting with those changes is an important part of bringing the team to the its highest level of performance. And we boil that work down into what we call the 3x3. It's a really simple framework. The first 3 stands for goals, roles, and norms. And then the second 3 stands for the process of committing to those goals, roles, and norms, checking in, and making small adjustments. And again, the Bruce Springsteen's career is a really, really nice illustration of that process. You know, he had a goal. He assessed his skills, He made changes when he needed to. And little by little, through small steps, he became the person that he wanted to be. Teams go through the same process. You know, they establish a goal, they check in, and little by little move toward their goals. So basically, you know, what we do is with our executives is a lot like what Bruce Springsteen did in his own career and with his band, for that matter. So, you know, he experimented with a lot of different bands until he found the right mix of Steve Van Zandt and Clarence Clemens and so on. And teams have to go through a similar process of experimenting and moving people on and off the team and revising their roles. So that can all seem really messy, and we summarize it in that simple 3x3 framework. You know, easy to say and pretty easy to remember, but hard to do. That's where the hard work comes in.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of things are easy to say, but they're hard to do. In fact, when you look at it, I think that the simpler the truth, the harder to master.
Yeah.
You know, because look, all you have to do to get wealthy is save your money and invest it. That's pretty simple, but it's pretty hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, generally we're not disciplined.
Right.
But the simplicity has a big advantage, and that's why we like, you know, simple frameworks like the 3x3. Complex ideas are nice, and we like to write books, so we like complex ideas, and complex ideas have their place, but probably you're not gonna implement a really complex idea. So the
right.
simpler the better. And that, you know, a simple idea like the 3x3, you can remember it and then you can work at it and little by little get better and better at it. So I think you're absolutely right. Simple ideas are often hard to apply, but it's a lot easier to apply simple ideas than complex ideas.
Absolutely correct. I mean, complex, the more complex, the easier it fails. What's the old saying? Keep it simple, right? Keep it simple,
yeah.
Or something.
Keep
anyway.
It simple. KISS.
Yeah.
The KISS.
Keep it simple. All right. So let's talk about
Absolutely.
This. I want to talk about taking some of the committed teams theory, the three steps to inspiring passion and performance. And I want to ask you, how can, you know, we raise someone's game, whether they're, you know, a Bruce Springsteen, an entrepreneur, a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or even, you know, a politician campaigning to run, for the presidency?
Yeah. Yeah. It starts with a vision or an interest, as we've been saying, and then practice. So practice trumps talent. There's just a whole lot of evidence that that's the case, and our experience tells us that's true. So it's not as though you don't need to have some talent. Like, you know, Springsteen had to be able to sing at least a little bit or play the guitar at least a little bit. But in the end, practice trumps talent, and not just doing the same thing over and over again, but following some guidelines or a system. So there's something in the world of peak performance studies that's called disciplined or deliberate practice. And it starts with a few principles. So whether you're playing a guitar, playing tennis, leading people, doing a scientific experiment, there are ways to do it right and then ways to do it wrong. So it's good to know the ways to do it right, whatever it is. So those are the principles. And then it's not enough just to think about
them.
Okay,
so hold on. So let me put a tack in that. And so give us a quick example, wrong way, right way of practice.
Well, let's look at goal setting in a team. People are going to be more engaged if you give them an opportunity to talk about a goal. So a mistake that a lot of team leaders make is they pull a bunch of people together and they say, you know, here are a bunch of goals on a flip chart. Here's where we're, you know, this is what these are the points that are gonna that we're driving toward. Let's go off and do it. That might sound like a great way to set direction, but probably people aren't going to be engaged. So one principle would be being, you know, help your people be engaged. Ask them to ask questions. Ask them to make a link between team goals and the WIFM principle. You know, what's in it for me? You're going to get a whole lot more out of them in that way. So that engagement principle is key to goal setting. So that would be an example of a principle that's really important when it comes to the early stages of forming a team.
I like that. Yeah. Okay. Now let's pull the tack out and go on to the next principle.
Okay, good. Good. And then, you just heard me talk about that principle. Hopefully that's helpful, but it's not going to be really all that helpful till you try to do it. So next time you're pulling a group of people together in a team setting, try that. You know, that is, ask them, what do they think about their goals? How can those goals help them work on something that's important to them? Maybe some developmental goal. Maybe they want to get better at doing a marketing analysis, or they want to get better at doing understanding a spreadsheet or a financial report. So try it out. That's the application part. So there's the principle, then you have to apply it. And when you apply a principle, you develop muscle memory in exactly the same way that an athlete develops muscle memory. You know, you can watch someone hit a baseball, hit a tennis ball, but you're not going to get better by doing that alone. You actually have to play the game. So lay down those tracks, muscle memory, that make it easier for you to apply the principles. So second step is to apply the principles. And then third step is get some feedback, because nobody's perfect at applying an idea or applying a principle. So feedback is really, really important. You know, that this is why coaching works, because coaching, it gives you an opportunity to hear from somebody else how you're doing, whether it's on the sports field or whether it's in a conference room. And then so you get some feedback, and then you ask, how do I make some small changes in my behavior to align what I'm doing with those basic principles that lead to success? So the fourth step is adjust. And the way top performers get better is by making those small adjustments in their behavior. The coach of the British Olympic cycling team a few years ago was asked, how'd your team get to be so good when it used to be terrible? And what he said is, we're committed to, as he put it, the aggregation of marginal gains. In other words, small step changes, little changes that shave off a microsecond here, a microsecond there. And then you add all those up, and you become the best in the world. Same idea applies to anything, really.
Right, right. There's an adage for that. Inch by inch, it's a cinch. Yard by yard, it's really hard. So today you start, and I love that idea, just getting a little bit better. And I think that I can't remember the gentleman's name. He's all about that. I think the Japanese call it Kaizen, you know, where you're looking to improve just a little bit at a time. And over the course of weeks or months or years, you become phenomenal.
Right. Continuous improvement. Right.
Thank
exactly.
you. Continuous improvement. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I try to apply that principle in my own work life, and actually all parts of my life every day. So, one practice I've learned works for me is not to leave a task to the last minute. I'm not at my best under those conditions. So I like to little by little push a task along, little by little work on my skills. And that seems to work for me, and it seems to work for a lot of people.
Absolutely. You take these small chunks, and you can get a lot of big things done that you thought, that were impossible, right?
Right.
And back to your overnight success, I think somebody said that the average overnight success is like 17 years or 15 years in the making. I mean, it's not like – and back to Bruce Springsteen, I think Bruce is a great example because I guarantee you a lot of people didn't just hear his voice the first time and go, yeah, that raspy voice, that's a winner.
Absolutely.
Let's jump on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting. You know, there's a whole bunch of rock memoirs out now that I think it's really useful for business people to read. There's Springsteen's, Elvis Costello's book, Keith Richards' book, Bob Dylan's book. They're so interesting because they give you the backstory of these megastars. And what the common thread running through all those stories is hours and hours and years of practice, learning how to play, learning to get comfortable with performing, defining their public persona, you know, the character that they are up on stage. It's really useful to read that backstory because it does drive home that point that you were just making. Success rarely happens all at once. It would be nice if it did, but probably counterproductive. To expect that to happen, better to get used to the hard work. But, you know, to go back to something we were talking about earlier, if you really love what you do, you're gonna keep doing it. And there's tremendous satisfaction at getting better, better and better at it. So you may be working 17 years to reach that overnight success, but if you really love what you do, you're going to have a lot of fun while you're doing it.
Yes, and I think that's really the key. Mark Cuban, Shark Tank fame and Mavericks fame, stuff
sure.
like that, he talks about, you know, find what you love to do and maybe you'll make a good living at it. And I love that because there's no guarantee in life, right? So, but just find something that you love to do and worst case scenario, you're going to be more fulfilled. You're going to have more joy. You're going to love to get up every morning and go do what you do because you love to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's important for you to make money and you know that, then it's useful to remind yourself that that's something that you want to try to work toward. And if you keep reminding yourself of that, you'll probably see opportunities to make a connection between what you love and money-making opportunities. The Louis Pasteur, the great scientist, once said, opportunity favors the prepared mind. So
yes.
If your mind is prepared, you're gonna see parts, opportunities in the environment that you might not otherwise see. So reminding yourself day to day about what you love, but also how you want to make that connection between what you love and making a living. If you do that, you're going to see opportunities that might otherwise pass you by.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and the thing about it is, you have to, as you said, be prepared, focus on what you love to do. The opportunities will come out. I have a client, for instance, she loves houseplants and she's very good at keeping houseplants alive. And she has a whole website, excuse me, in book series and course series on how to keep your houseplants alive, which might sound funny or silly to somebody. But every time I mention that, most people go, wow, that's actually kind of cool because I can't keep my houseplants alive.
Right. Yeah, sure. And that might be something that she sounds like it's something that she loves.
Yes.
And she's good at.
She, because of the internet, she does like a couple hundred grand a year.
It's not bad.
No, it's not bad. Doing what you love to do, keep and teaching people how to keep a houseplant alive. My point being to this is that, first of all, God bless technology that we, you and I and everybody can access the internet and start tapping into that traffic out there. And second of all, that, you know, we can test out different things without investing millions of dollars. You know, we don't have to have an office and put in expensive phone equipment to see if our idea is going to work. We can launch a website and we can start testing things and very inexpensively to see what kind of feedback we get, and then we can change according to that feedback.
Yeah, you know, your example of your client in the houseplant business brings up a really good important point, which is that it's helpful to identify, to find inspirational figures that keep you motivated. So, you know, for me, Springsteen is one, as well as the other rock stars I was talking about. And, you know, for someone else, it might be this woman who's learned how to leverage her interest in houseplants into a six-figure business. So I would suggest to folks, find those figures, think about them, read about them, and ask yourself, you know, how can I become a little bit like that person so that I get a chance to do even more of what I love and then maybe make a little money at it if that's important to you.
Yeah, and I think money is sooner or later going to be important to all of us, right? We don't all have to be, a billionaire. That may not be your dream, or maybe it is. That's fine. But, you know, sooner or later, money obviously becomes important because you have to buy things and pay for things. And I don't care whether you're going to be living in a tiny house or a regular house. It still takes money. You need money.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And hopefully you can have some fun while you're making money. And if you find your passion, you can make that connection between what you really love and making money. And you might have to experiment a bit. So, you see that with musicians, and then you see it with business people. It's really rare that an entrepreneur comes up with an idea and it's that idea that brings him or her to the place they want to be. They have to make a lot of changes. Abraham Lincoln once said, if he ran the country the way a riverboat captain would navigate the Mississippi. He'd identify a turn in the river, get to that turn in the river, and then decide where to go. I think entrepreneurs, creative people manage themselves in that way. They know ultimately they want to get to the end of the river, but they don't know exactly where all the twists and turns are going to take them.
Yep, absolutely correct. Mario, this has been a lot of fun. It's been a blast to have you on the show, and look forward to having you back again another time.
Great. Thank you very much.
You bet. Good stuff there from Dr. Mario Musa. And the book is called Committed Teams, 3 Steps to Inspiring Passion and Performance. And again, he teaches in the executive programs at Wharton School of Executive Education. Live, just really enjoyed that discussion. There were so many nuggets. I hope you guys picked up on it. Love the whole Bruce Springsteen example and the whole conversation on knowing what you're good at. And even if you don't consider yourself that good at it, because you love to do it, go and pursue it, right? And so just a lot of stuff that's worth maybe downloading and listening to again. Connect with me, if you would, on Instagram. That'd be great. And if you have questions about my upcoming book, Dominating Your Mind, that's going to be available soon at dominatingyourmind.com. As always, I'm so very grateful for you guys stopping by. I'm grateful for your support. And most of all, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.